All right, Marty Lurie here in KMBR 680. What a thrill. A beautiful night at the ballpark, and who will you run into but the first Willie Mack Award winner? That's Jack the Ripper, Jack Clark. Jack, when we say your name out here, people see you at the plate and that menacing look with the bat. How are you?
I'm doing well, Marty. It's good to see you. Great to be back in the Bay Area. My sister still lives here, so I still have roots here. I've never left.
Jack Clark with us. Jack, just so people, boy, they hear your name now, but they don't know much about you, how you became a Giant, where you grew up, what kind of fan you were, how you learned to be that kind of hitter. Take us through your early years of baseball.
Well, you know, first of all, I never thought I was going to play baseball at any kind of higher level. But, you know, you kind of just keep kind of chugging along, and then you have a little bit of success. But, you know, we won our CIF 2A championship. And when I was, you know, that school had never won any kind of baseball award or football or about nothing. And and when we did win that championship, we had some good players on that team. And I'm not saying it was me, but we had some, it takes everybody. And, but we still won. You have to win to really get that kind of recognition, you know. And walking through, going to our bus afterward after celebrating the field and winning, celebrating our championship and taking our pictures, going to the bus, the school bus, because we played at a little junior college out in Laverne. Instead of a high school field, which was pretty cool for us. And George Genovese, old-time scout here with the signed a lot of players, Maddox and Matthews and those kind of guys. I didn't know him at the time. Walked past me and said, "Hey, I'm George Genovese of the San Francisco Giants." He was at the game. No other scout ever came up to me. So the San Francisco Giants, we're going to draft you. I was like, man, that would be awesome, because that was my team was the Giants. Even though I was down in Southern California, I always watched, you know, Mays and those guys and Marichal. I mean, I love that. I love watching them beat up on the Dodgers. Unfortunately, when I did get to the big leagues, we didn't beat up on the Dodgers all that much. They were a little bit better than us and had a little more resources than we did. So, but you know, you just learn from all that. I learned from my guru hitting coach, like a lot of us did. You know, Hank Sauer took a lot of us under our wing, and we all learned how to hit and slug. Not necessarily be home run hitters, but slug. You know, if you look at a lot of the guys, the Will Clarks, the Kevin Mitchells, the Jack Clarks, we all kind of had a little waggle to our bat. That's what he taught us. There was a certain point on our shoulder where he taught us to lift it off. It wasn't in the middle. It wasn't down the side. It was like right on the point, like right where your shirt, you know, where the seam is, and that's where you'd start, and you'd lift it off of there and have a little bit of movement to load it up, and then let her rip. Because if he asked you if you could hit, your answer better not be, you better not pause, you better not think about it. It just is one answer. That's all he asked, no matter how old or young. And if he came to you, Marty, right now and said, "Marty, could you hit?" Your answer to him, to Hank, to the hammer, to the schnoz, would be, "You bet your sweet ass I get hit," you know? And so I teach that today when I give hitting lessons. I say, and after I'm working with the kids, they say, "Can you hit?" "Yeah, I can hit." And I said, "Anybody ask you if you can hit, your answer is, you bet your sweet ass you can hit. You can either hit or you can't, you know? So if you love doing it, you have a passion for it, you let it fly." And I was fortunate to be around Hank and, you know, that group that was together then, you know, from Davenport, and just, you know, it was a special group with Horst Stoneham and everybody else at the beginning. And it was very cool to be able to play for, you know, Bill Rigney when I first came up. And, you know, just it's like, hey, yeah, hey, I'm honored that I can say that, and, you know, that's how old I am, but in a good way, you know, because, you know, that's how you learn, and it's part of history. And to me, that's the part of baseball that's missing a little bit, is that tradition. Now, I know it all has to change at some point and kind of come and go, but I'm glad I was able to play for them when those guys were still alive, and may they all rest in peace, just as in St. Louis, where I live now. You know, Stan the Man Musial has passed away and everything, but some of those guys are special, and they're not just Hall of Fame people. They're Hall of players. They're Hall of Fame people too, you know. So for me as a kid to have those guys come up was very special. It taught me to have a passion and a, not an anger, but to pull it out of myself, that you have a job to do, and damn it, get it done. You know, you can do it. What are you afraid of? Let it go. What are you? Don't be nice to the baseball, you know. So go out there and swing as hard as you can, under control, controlled aggression. That's what Hank taught, and try to do damage. And once you learn, then you start learning about zones and pitches and certain counts and everything, and seeing more pitches and wearing guys down and everything else. Better chance that when you get one, and I think I got one when I was a Cardinal in the playoffs to go to the World Series against those pond scum down in Southern California. But that was also a hit for me of a lot of frustration years when we didn't win and they did. So I was able, even though I wasn't a Giant at the time, I was able to, I think, tell everybody. I think I was pretty sure that I told everybody, including the great Cardinal fans, but also the great Giant fans, that that was for a lot of frustrating years in San Francisco against these guys. And I was glad to break their heart in front of national millions of people, because they always talked about, Tom Lasorda always talked about bleeding Dodger blue. And he spilled all kind of blood out there. It was Dodger blue blood, but you know, when it came down to it, they bled just like all of us. They're human beings. They bleed red just like all of us. No, they're nothing special, that's for sure.
I love it. Boy, great story. And I was going to ask you why they called you Jack the Ripper. I think you answered that. And who gave you that nickname?
Yeah, I got that from Vita Blue, gave me that name here from Candlestick Park. I used to hit fly balls that I thought were home runs, 2- and 3-run home runs, or at least sacrifice flies, you know, and shoot, the wind and the fog and the cold and everything would blow the ball back, and it ended up, the shortstop would end up catching, and I got no ribby and an AB, and I got frustrated with it. And so I started just top-handing everything and trying to hit hard, low ground balls, and that's where the sound coming off my bat started making a different sound, because I had more bat speed. I was cleaning the baseball better. When I say that, I mean hitting it more consistently on the sweet part of the bat. And as a result, I didn't hit a whole lot of more home runs, Marty, but I hit a lot of, I started slugging them, because I started driving it through the wind and getting it in the gaps, getting it to that chain link fence, hitting it off that fence, hitting it over the fence, you know, whereas before they were just ABs. So I taught myself how to hit, which is really the way you're supposed to hit. And I wish I would have had that from the beginning before I got here, because I wouldn't have given away any at bats, because I really don't like pitchers, and I really wanted to crush every one of them I could. You know, I mean, I'm going up there tonight with, you know, with Kuiper, who's my buddy, you know, who him and I have something in common. We're both home run hitters. He hit one, I hit 340. But we're in the same book, you know. But even Mike Kruko, who I love, is a good friend and everything. But you know, there's times, you know, I remember, and I'll talk with him later. But I remember hitting one, I think, when he was with the Phillies. I hit one in the upper deck, and it went right down the line. And I stood at home plate, and I looked at it, and I kind of leaned like, is that going to go fair? Is that going to go foul? And it went fair, but I still didn't run. I kind of looked at the umpire, and then he started, you know, waving like that's a home run. So then I took off. Well, years later, he wanted payback, and he got me in Candlestick, and I don't remember what the count was, and I think I was with the Cardinals at the time. And I mean, he set me up big time. He threw like fastball away, and then like a slider away, and then he threw a fastball right at my earlobe, you know. And I mean, I don't know how I got out of the way, but I did. And I saw him do it. I saw him when he was winding up. It's like he's putting it, you could hear him grunt. His aim was like right at me, you know. But you know, that's okay. That's the way, you know, it was always an honor to be knocked down by Seaver and some of these guys, because they wanted half of their plate, you know. We're now guys that have, you know, not so much anymore, but in the last 10, 15 years, a lot of guys went to the dark side and took away the plate, and they stood up on there, especially when you couldn't knock guys down anymore, and there was, you know, just took the whole plate and just dead, and they're wearing armored gear on their arms and everything else, you know. So I don't know, I liked it. I don't know about you, Marty, but I remember the days with Drysdale and Mays and knocking them down, and Frank Robinson and Hank Aaron. and guys just getting knocked down, getting right back in there. And that's what I was taught. That's what Hank Sauer taught us. That's what he taught us when he was the MVP with Chicago. And I think he had 42 home runs that year. And I think he got a he either got a $5,000 raise or they gave him a $5,000 pay cut. I think he was the MVP at 42 home runs. They gave him a $5,000 pay cut. So they don't do that anymore now. If you hit five home runs, they usually give you about a $10 million raise. That's different than when Hank was around. But you know, those guys all had fun with Horace Stoneham, and it was a special group, and it was real raw baseball people, you know, teaching raw baseball stuff. Not a lot of video, a lot of technology. It was human beings giving you the word, giving you information, talking to you like a man, trying to help you, kind of guide you through with instructional leagues down in Arizona, where at the time there was four teams. It was the Giants, it was Oakland, it was the Dodgers and the Angels. Those were the only four teams. And it was, but you in fall ball with those four teams, you were playing against the best that the Angels had. You were playing against the best that the young players that the Dodgers had. You were playing against the best guys that the Oakland had. And you were playing on the best guys that the Giants had at the time. So they considered you a top prospect. That's when they, you know, tried to make me a third one. Not tried to. They wanted me to be a third baseman. They wanted me, when I, by the time I made it to the big leagues, to be the next third baseman. And at the time, I think Anaveras was ahead of me. So I gave that a shot. And then they traded for Kenny Reitz, and so they said there's no reason to be third base. We got a vacuum cleaner out there, a Zamboni machine over there. We don't need it, so we put you back in the outfield, which was fine for me because I had a good arm and I enjoyed throwing, and I just enjoyed those challenges. But again, that's a small world, Marty, how that benefited. You talk about stories. That benefited the St. Louis Cardinals and Whitey Herzog, the White Rat, the Hall of Famer, when I became a Cardinal, because my first one was traded from the Giants there. There were three of us in right field. There was myself, Andy Van Slyke, and Tito Landrum. And that lasted about a week. I took my fly balls. I didn't know the guys, whatever. Took infield, outfield, you know, through from right field. And he came to me after about 5 days and says, you know, I really don't want to platoon through three guys. He says, would you move to first base? And I was like, no, I don't want to move to first base. He says, oh, you're a natural. He says, I looked you up. You were a third baseman in the minor leagues with the Giants. He wanted to make. He says, if you played third base, first base will be a piece of cake. I said, well, you know, I always used to have anywhere from 17, 18 to 21 assists every year. And right, I like showing off my arm and throwing. And I like, you know, I always thought about, well, you know, the good players are in right field, and I just kind of want to stay in one position my whole career. And he's like, you know, just go over to first base, give it a shot. If you don't like it, I'll get you out of there, you know. So I went over there, and after about 2 weeks, I was learning the bunt plays and the pickoff plays and everything else, turning the double plays, which it took me a while because I had Ozzie Smith over at shortstop, and I'm still over at first, like charging the ball like a right fielder, trying to then catch it, throw a ball to the second baseman, and then at the same time I'm running. And I'm making a bad throw, and everybody's safe. And so I finally learned, just let Ozzie, just give him a good throw. He'll turn the double play. That nobody can really outrun the baseball. But Whitey came to me afterward. Like he said, he was a man of his word. He said, well, how do you like it, man? I said, well, I don't like it. I want to go back to the outfield. He says, man, you look like a natural out there. I said, Whitey, come on, man. You asked me, and I don't like it. I mean, I played right field. I mean, I don't want to play first base. I mean, I always thought first base kind of like going a little bit older, you know, can't do this. And he's like, nah, man. You look like an. He said, I'll tell you what. If you, this is how he got me, man. Marty, this is how he got me, man. He said, if you don't like it by the All-Star break, he gave me all the way to the All-Star break now. If you don't like it by the All-Star break, I'll get you out of there. I was like, okay. Well, come to find out, we're the All-Star break. I'm having my best season. We're winning. We're not supposed to win. He was in spring training. He was supposed to be the first manager fired. We were going to come in last place and lose 105 games or something like that. Well, here we are. We're playing the Mets and all those teams, and we're winning. We're in first place, you know. John Tudor started the season 1-10 and won the next 20 in a row and ended up 21-10, you know, with Andujar winning 20 games. And we took the Mets out, who had that powerful team, and beat them. And, you know, that was the Cardinals. They stole over 300 bases that year. And that, for me, being at first base, yes. I had the best seat in the house, not just for Ozzie, but for Pendleton over at third, and Tommy Herr, and Willie McGee in center, and Vince Coleman came up, and they stole over 300 bases that year. And for me, then it gets back to me being a slugger. I had all these switch hitters on the team. I was the only right-handed hitter, and I was the only power hitter on the team. Mm-hmm. But they had all this speed, and it's like these guys were always, it was like a track meet out there. I mean, it was fun to watch. Because the only chance they had to throw them out, Marty, is by throwing fastballs. Because if they threw a breaking ball or changeup, they saw the signs, they were gone, and I just took it. It got to the point that I learned from Joe Morgan, because he used to tell me this when I was here with Johnny Bench. He'd give him the signs, told me how he'd give him. Like, if it was a fastball, he'd just stand on his, keep his hands on his knees. If it was an off-speed pitch or breaking pitch, he would take like another half step, stand up, and then go back. And that man was off-speed. Now, it got with Johnny Bench. It's like, if you want that fastball or you want that curveball or change, because you know what's coming, then go for it. But if not, something slow, I'm going to steal the base. Just, you'd rather hit me on second, because I can steal third easier than I can second. So I learned from that. I stayed over there at first and kind of finished my career there. I did some DH and became a first baseman. But I really liked it because, you know, all those years in the outfield, there were so many times I wanted to come up to the pitcher and just say, hey, this guy here and this guy's on deck. You know, and I couldn't do it. And it gave me an opportunity to go over there and take the pressure off some of those guys or put some pickoff plays on that normally you wouldn't see where I'd, you know, go behind somebody. And, you know, they always say, well, he's not that quick. But if you time it right, you look pretty damn quick, you know. So I learned from all that. I learned from the Hall of Famers. You know, you learn from Whitey Herzog, you know. I mean, the White Rat, the Hall of Famer, who spent all those years with Casey Stengel. You know, I came up with when Bill Rigney was here. I mean, you know, I played for some good, great baseball people in St. Louis with Red Shandy's there. And all the people here with the Giants coming up through the minor leagues, the Davenports, you know, and all that. So, you know, I just felt like I was pretty lucky to be able to play with one great team with the Giants, which I wanted to start and finish with. You know, Marty, it's like most players, good players, I don't consider myself a great player, but a good player, you know, that you like to start and finish with that same team if you can, you know. But the business of baseball, the politics and the industry of it, with strikes and lockouts, you know, with Marvin Miller and basic agreements and fights that were going on, that was a strange time because as a union, and we always thought about the guys, what they did before us, you know. But when it came down to it, you know, playing for the people I played for, I really enjoyed it. Bruce Bochy's father-in-law, Trader Jack McKeon in San Diego, brought me to San Diego, and I learned a lot from him. I enjoyed playing for him, and I enjoyed how just laid back and Danny Murtaugh-like he was about things, you know. But when he wanted to be fiery about things or he wanted something, he knew certain players, he'd call me in and say, I want you and the captain of the team to go in and I'd call a meeting on that. And I don't care if you rip guys or not. I want to shake it up a little bit, you know. So he respected you and he understood you if you were capable of it. Like most managers, they don't put you in a position to not. They put you in a position to succeed, and they understand who the guys can and will and he can trust, you know, to do that type of stuff. So, but I sure would have liked to play my whole career with the Giants, even in Candlestick Park, you know. Yeah, I mean, just that was home. You know, that's where I first started. I remember my first day. I don't know how long you got, Marty, but my first
interview I've done all year.
Well, my first day in the big leagues, and we were in Double A, Gary Alexander and myself, and we were in the playoffs, and we were playing the Cubs, and these little ballparks in Double A, raining. So finally, we lost 3 or 4 days. We had been called up, but the Giants wouldn't let us come until we finished those playoff games with our teammates in the minor leagues. So finally, they brought the helicopters, dried the field. We played that game. We won that game. We got in our cars. We drove nonstop from Lafayette, Louisiana, all the way to get here. And I remember getting to the hotel over by the airport, the Holiday Inn, Gary Matthews, Sarge coming to pick us up. Picked us up, never didn't know how to get to Candlestick Park. Picked us up, brought us to the ballpark, came in, you know, went out and took batting practice and took fly balls and just kind of looked around, you know, Candlestick Park. And that's what I remember about Candlestick Park, you know, just how special that was that I was in the big leagues, you know. And I was a Giant. I was with my team, the team that I wanted to be with. I mean, a lot of guys can't say that. You know, they get picked by all the other teams, but the team that you really want to be with, that's the one you really, and I didn't push it. They just actually picked me. George Genovese liked me and took a chance on me. And I didn't make any money. I remember he gave me $7,500, came to my mom and dad's house and said, I got $7,500 for your son. If he makes it to the big leagues, he'll make that over 1,000 times, you know, but you got to work hard and everything else. And he just believed he saw something in me, and like he did a lot of players, you know, a lot of the great players that he saw. So, you know, it was just an honor to be out there. But that first game, so the game's getting ready. So we're playing Cincinnati, the Big Red Machine. So you got all these great players. You got Rose leading off, and Morgan, and then Bench, and then Perez. You know, that's the way they were hitting right then. So Pete Rose makes an out, and Joe Morgan gets a base hit. Now Johnny Bench is up. And you remember Candlestick Park. I used to sit like where the bat rack was, which kind of looked right down home plate, down third baseline that way. The manager stood up at the other end, kind of the first base side. And so it's the top of the first. I just got to the big leagues. And so Joe Morgan, I'm kind of watching these. I went out and watched these guys take batting practice, Tony Perez, all these guys take their batting, Pete Rose. And so the game starts. I'm not playing, so I'm sitting there watching. First inning, you know, Pete Rose makes it out. Then can't, how many people can say that and saw him make an out, you know? And then Joe Morgan has a base hit.
Okay.
Then the next pitch with Johnny Bench in, he's still second. The next pitch after that, he's still third. And I was like, wow, this is the big leagues, man. Gosh, you know, that's Joe Morgan, man, you know. The next pitch to Johnny Bench, he steals home.
Really?
He stole all three bases with Johnny Bench hitting. And I was like, man, I didn't know whether I was ready for the big leagues after that. I mean, if this is the big leagues, this is big leagues in a different out and outer space somewhere, you know. This is how good you got to be in the big leagues. I don't know, man. You know, that's I've never seen that before. Of all the baseball games I've ever watched, and to be honest with you, to this day, I don't think I've ever seen that before. And that was my first day. And I was like, well, this is the Big Red Machine. This is why they're so good. This is why they're so dangerous. This is why Joe Morgan always says everybody should have an opportunity to play with Pete Rose and for Sparky Anderson. And now I get it, you know. So I had a chance to be teammates with Joe Morgan. I had teammates to be with Kuiper. And so a lot of great teammates, a lot of turnover. Fans treated me very well in San Francisco. And I wish we could have done better, you know. And that means I should have done better. That means if I would have learned and understood and been able to master the art of hitting earlier, it would have benefited the Giants and the fans and my teammates more, whereas it actually ended up benefiting the Cardinals, because that's when I actually grew up as a young man and a man and in the industry of baseball, and kind of understood it and was able to play and take off from there. So a lot of great announcers over the years, you know. So I was just very lucky to be around Lon Simmons and Jack Buck, you know. And so it's just we're all getting older. In November, I'm going to be 60 years old. Today for the Willie McCovey Award, they said, well, you know, can you come out? We're going to have all the players come out from right field. Well, I just had knee surgery about a month ago. So, well, that didn't seem far, but for me, that seems real far. I said, I'll do it. I'll make it. I'll get my way out there. But I said, that's a long ways. I thought we were just standing here by home plate. I was going to kind of kneel by McCovey, you know, hang on to him a little bit, you know. So, but yeah, it should be a good night, a fun night, and I'm honored that, you know, I'm back here. And
you were the first.
And I was the first, and I have that kind of golden shallot still, you know, of that first cup, you know, which is very, very simplistic. I haven't seen them for years. I seen them a couple of years ago hand them out, and they're much more
elaborate.
Yeah, exactly. Good word.
Yeah.
Mine was just the simplicity. It was what I liked about it was a real thick base, just had a plaque, orange plaque on the front, Willie Mack Award winner, blah, 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 and a cup, you know, just a cup. And the cup would always fall off, you know. You know, it was like it was screwed in from the top, and it was always kind of get loose and get twisted, and it would always kind of, you know, in my moves or whatever, somehow it would come loose or whatever, and I'd go to set up and it'd fall off, you know. So a chip corner here, chip corner. few scratches, and I'd put it back in there and try to tighten it down. But you needed like some real special tool to get down to the into the cup all the way to the bottom. And I didn't have that tool, you know, so I tightened it the best I could with my hand, but it seemed like it was never good enough. But I don't have really any baseball. I don't put my baseball things up on the wall for me. I have them. I have pictures of me with people, pictures with Stargell, where he signed to me, and I was a big Stargell fan. I got pictures with McCovey, and I got pictures with Willie Mays and McCovey together, and those type of things. So I have those type of memories. But for me, I don't put much of myself up there, and so I don't have many trophies. But I do have that Willie McCovey, Willie Mack Award trophy, and like I say, I like it because it's simple. I still have it, and after, I guess it's been about 30 years, it's beat up, and it's, you know, they get tarnished a little bit, and everybody always wants to kind of clean it for him, make it really pretty, and I said, no, just leave it. That's the way I like it, because everybody look at it and go, it's not real sexy. It's not a great, not this big, massive, no, and the wood is chipped on it a little bit, you know, and it had come apart a little bit. It's a long time being in the heat and everything else, moving around, but you know, I keep putting it back together, and it stands by itself.
Boy, what a pleasure. I'm not done yet. That's Jack Clark. Really, what a pleasure. And now, really, having you tell the story, I realize why you're such an amazing baseball player and an amazing Giant here. But the Willie Mack Award, that was the first ever given out. And, you know, it's inspirational, who he was as a player, what his teammates thought of him. And you got the first one. What does that mean to you?
Well, yeah, I didn't know that it was going to go on to become what it has been, but it meant a lot to me then because it was, for one, it was my friend, Stretch, and it was my teammates, and that's always important, you know. I always liked it that if you made the All-Star team, it was because your peers picked you. You know, now the fans pick it, and all, but I liked it when the peers picked you, you know, because they thought you were deserving. They thought you played at a level that was worth that honor. So anytime it came from your peers, I mean, I like the way they do it now. The fans are involved there. But at that point, listen, if your peers pick you, then you better do something. You know, you get to the All-Star game and your peers picked you. It's like, well, they picked it. Now you can't let all your peers down, you know, let alone the other All-Stars that are here and everything else, you know. So I think I liked that because you didn't have to go out and say, okay, here's what it is, boys. If you win the All-Star game, your division will get, the National League of America will get home field advantage in the World Series. You didn't have to do that. It was, you wanted to win. There was no way Pete Rose and those guys, and I was in the All-Star game with, I mean, it was like, no way. I mean, we're not losing the game. We are not losing to the American League. There's no way. We're the National League. And, I mean, let me tell you, that message was sent home, and you went out there, and you had a drive in you that you weren't, and I didn't do much in the All-Star games. I got one time I got 3 at-bats, but most of the time it was either I didn't play or I got a pinch hit or something like that. But, I mean, as far as what it was about we're better than them. We're the National League. We're the real league. They're not. You know, we are and they're not, and we're going to show them. And we did most of the time. It's changed a little bit now, but for a while there, we didn't have to be kind of, you know, we didn't have to be told to win, and because, you know, I still don't get where that's a big advantage for a team that's going to lose 100 and some games, that they care whether, you know, one of their other rivals gets to celebrate the home field advantage, you know. So, but, you know, games change, and it's a great game, and we love it, and I'm just glad it's getting cleaned up a little bit. And, you know, I'm a purist. You know, I was good friends with Stan Musial, and may he rest in peace, as well as Hank Sauer, who's not with us anymore. And, you know, we just lost Yogi. So, I mean, you know, we're all not going to be here forever. And those people and what they were able to do, you look at Yogi's stats. I mean, four-time MVP. I mean, what he did and how many All-Star. I mean, those guys were special. I don't think rewarding guys for cheating is quite the way to go. It really bugs me, and I don't accept it, and I've been vocal about it, and I always will, and I'll never just go ahead and say, well, that's okay. What those guys did is special and should be recognized as that, because again, they were not just special ball players; they were special people. They fought for the country. They went to war. I mean, Yogi was at D-Day. You know, I mean, let's give them credit where they should be. You know, instead of just paying somebody and thinking, well, that automatically throws them into a category as a Hall of Famer. You know, so, I mean, get your money, that's fine, but don't sell us and tell us that we have to automatically put them in the category of the Musials. And the Yogis and the Mantles and the Aarons and the Mazes and the McCoveys and those type of guys. You know, you catch them, you pass them, that's fine. Just make sure you did it legitimate. Just because you didn't get caught, even if it was alleged you did, that's the same to me as being factual. So,
boy, Jack Clark with us. Let's pause for 1 second here. Jack Clark, boy, what a man. Really, I appreciate having you on. And we're going to pause for a second and come back. I want to ask Jack about the World Series. And Don Denkinger, because now we have replay. I'll get his thoughts on that right after this.